got it.
Yeah, so we're still in Perek Aleph of Shmuel, first chapter. And we left off, we were discussing the episode where Hannah is davening, she's praying for a son, and Eli, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, is observing her as she prays. And in verse, let's go with Yud-Gimel, Pasuk Yud-Gimel, it says, verse 13, V'chana hi medaberes aliva, and Hannah was speaking on her heart, literally. The Gemara interprets this meaning with a lot of kavana. Rak sifasea na'os, only her lips were moving. V'kola lo yishamea, and her voice was not heard. V'yachshavea Eli l'shikora, and Eli considered her to be drunk. Good morning.
As long as I have food, I don't want to open the safe.
All right. So you tell me when you're ready.
On the side, you
sure. You'll
be ready for Pesach.
Get that one over here. Eli, the high priest, was watching her, and he was seeing her daven, and he thought that she was drunk. So, Rashi says that the reason why he thought she was drunk was because didn't normally daven quietly, and here she was davening quietly. Now, we started discussing last time the Gemara in Brachos and how it interprets these series, this pasuk really. And the Gemara says, Kama hilchasa gavrivasa ikul mishnah lehani kray dechana. How many lessons, halachos, we can learn from these verses of Chana. We learn many of the laws of davening from, actually really, this pasuk about Chana. So, the Gemara elaborates on that. It says, first we said, v'chana hi medaberes aliba. Chana was speaking on her heart. And the Gemara says, we learn from there, mikan l'mitzvah tzarech sheyichaving asvibo. From here we learn that somebody who's davening has to have kavana, has to have intent, has to concentrate when they're davening. Then it said, rak shifasel na'ot, only her lips were moving. Mikan l'mitzvah sheyachzok bisfasa. From here we learn that you have to move your lips. You can't just read with your eyes, you have to move your lips. The kola lo yishamea, and the pasuk says, and her voice was not heard. Mikan sha'asur lagbia kola b'tzilaso. From here we learn that you're not allowed to daven out loud, at least for the Amida, for the Shmona Esrei. You're not allowed to daven out loud, it's the silent prayer. And then we said, and Eli thought she was drunk. From here we learn that a drunk person is not allowed to daven. So a number of halachos that we learn from these sukkim. We asked the question last time that if Chana was seemingly doing as she was supposed to be doing, and we're learning halachos from what she was doing, then why did Eli think she was drunk? Ray Rashi says because she was davening out loud. Sorry, quietly, and it was normal to daven out loud. On the other hand, the Gemara is telling us the opposite. The Gemara is telling us that, no, we learn from Chana that you're actually supposed to daven quietly. So the Marsha asked this on Rashi, that how could Rashi say that they wouldn't normally daven quietly? Is it possible that they normally didn't daven properly? That doesn't make sense, the Marsha says. So rather, the Marsha says that the reason why he thought she was drunk was because she was davening so much, perhaps overpassionately, seemingly. He didn't understand why she was davening that much. And that's
sometimes
why he thought
like
she was drunk.
Like a drunk driver drives very, very slowly.
So a drunk davener davens very slowly. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, they're not functioning. It's also that, anything you think of, you start saying and you start, adding in and you daven because any whim,
don't tell that to an entrepreneur.
Right. On the other hand, from my own observation of people who are drunk, it's hard to concentrate and daven for very long. You know, you're like, you like you mumble through the words and then you're done. But and that's really why one shouldn't stop him when they're drunk.
So he was judging her.
Oh, very good. So the Gemara is going to get to, how he, that point. The Gemara is going to talk about that point. But the first question is, why did he think she was drunk if she was doing something properly? So we have one approach of Rashi, that it wasn't normal to daven quietly. The Maharsha doesn't like that. It seems from the Gemara that it was normal to daven quietly. The Maharsha says that the reason was because she was davening so much. So the Malbim has, using the same kind of idea as the Maharsha, that she was davening so much, he has sort of an elaborate explanation of what was going on here. The Pasuk, by the way, describes her as Tir Besala Hispalo, that she davened a lot. That was in the previous Pasuk in verse 12, Pasuk Yud-Bet. So the Malbim says that he says there's two types of tefillah. There's two ways to daven. There's the direct approach and there's the using a medium approach. What do I mean? So some people will daven someone else should bring their taste before Hashem. So they'll daven to angels, ask the angel to be the angel to be a melech, a messenger before God, and represent them before God. He says in that situation, what they're asking for is basically a lawyer, that the angels should go before God. And I'm not saying that all lawyers are angels, but
lawyers in the Gemara, lawyers, so we just had one today. They don't have too
really
good a reputation.
The difference is the client is the person, not the lawyer.
I think what the rabbi might want is the word intercessor.
Intercessor. So
don't ask me how to spell it.
He's not applying law. There's no law to it. It's just an intercessor.
What they're going to do is they're going to bring forth the case, the person's merit before Hashem, and ask for based on these merits for a redemption, for a salvation from God for the given situation. That's one way of praying, and the other way is without an intercessor, without a medium, and there's differences in how a person davens in each situation. So if you're davening straight directly to Hashem, you're not asked for anyone to intercede on your behalf. So he says you don't have to daven a long tefillah. It doesn't have to be a long davening. You're not presenting a case. You're not showing your merits. There's nothing to discuss, really. You're basically asking for mercy from God. And even if you have good deeds, the Chazal say, the sages say that a person should daven just for a matnas sinam, for a gift from God, for mercy, even if they have the merit. And so a person who's davening based just for mercy, so it's a fast davening. It doesn't have to be long necessarily. A person who's davening though through a intercessor, through a medium, that person should represent them, or that angel, let's say, should represent their interests and, represent their merits before God.
Where did this concept of an intercessor come from?
Where do we have that?
Your mitzvahs, the concept that when you do a mitzvah, you're creating a positive malach that could intervene, but I don't know.
I don't know, but every time there's a funeral, people say, he should be a melech yosher.
Yeah, right. That's after the person dies.
Like
right.
Intercessor or advocate.
An advocate for, the departed being advocate on our behalf before God. So there is this idea that a Kipari one or seemingly an angel could bring
right, right.
a face before.
I understand the with a person in the toys. I'm asking where this angel concept comes from.
Can I just say one more thing? When we die, our souls lift, and we judge right away, correct? We judge for everything. And then we have somebody on behalf that helps us be judged. Is that right or wrong?
Somebody who helps us be judged?
The
angel.
Your mitzvahs that you do.
No, but
they help defend you.
The angels defend you.
Against your mitzvahs.
Of course.
Yeah, so you create, in a person's lifetime, they've created angels for, that are their, as a result of their mitzvot, for their good deeds.
So they're creating
angels as a result of their sins, accusing angels.
So there are attorneys then, like you said, the lawyers.
Well, a form of it, yeah. But that's different than this. You understand what
I mean? This is davening to an angel. Now, absolutely. We're not saying what the best way to do, if this is a good approach, but it seems to be an approach that was sometimes used. That's what the Malbim is saying.
So, the whole idea today is that we don't pray for anything except a kind of sparkle.
Right.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, but if you pray for somebody, to push somebody, you don't ask the parents in the summer, but they see that you're going to try to call up their person.
Yeah, so this is really a whole topic in itself, which I didn't, prepare really, but, what's the idea of going to grave sites for Davin? You know, is it just for their merits, or you're asking them somehow to intercede? We say, if you ask Rabbi Grossman, he'll tell you that he skipped Barthuni L'Shalom on Shabbos and Shalom Aleichem. So the second stanza, the third stanza is Barthuni L'Shalom, right? You're asking the angels to bless you. So some, people have a problem with that. We don't have angels bless us, They God blesses us. In Slichos, we're going to start Slichos soon. There's at the end of Slichos, Machnise Rachamim. We ask the angels to bring our tzilos up to Hashem, which is really this. So some people don't say that because they have theological issues with it. But there is, there are those. I say it because it's in there. Some. And I'm not so such a hard line,
But the rabbi is the advocate at the funeral. He's the one who...
What?
At the graveside, he is the one who speaks to Hashem and the angels.
Well, we can daven.
At the funeral service. You always have a rabbi there that's...
He's conducting the funeral. I'm not sure, it's as much for the... For the survivors, the family. It's probably some part of both, but there's Kaddish, which is for the soul. I'm not sure if what the rabbi is doing is really for the soul. But there is some aspect of that. They say the neshama is still there until the burial. So there is a neshama, a comfort for the neshama, for the soul. So, there is some of that. So he says, though, that that's the difference. That if you're davening through an intermediary, through you're asking angels to represent you, so then it's a case. You need to present all the merits and all the, why the angel has to present why this person deserves the salvation. As opposed to if you're davening straight directly to Hashem, so then you can daven quick and just ask for mercy. That's one difference. The second difference is that if you're davening directly to Hashem, then you daven quietly because Hashem hears you. You don't need to daven out loud for Hashem. Hashem knows everything. Hashem knows your inner thought, and you don't need to daven out loud. However, that's what he said. As opposed to if you're davening through an intermediary, I don't know if he says they have to. He says yachol ashmiyakol. You're able to do it out loud. It could be when you're davening to Hashem out loud, it's kind of like disrespectful because Hashem can hear it either. You don't have to be so loud. But what he says, when you're davening to an angel, so you're able to have your voice heard. Then he says, though, because they don't know what you're thinking. They don't know your thoughts. Angels don't know your thoughts. So you need to be heard. So says the Malvin, based on this, we have two differences. One is that you're davening directly to Hashem, you're davening a quicker davening, and you're also davening quietly. If you're davening through an intercessor, then you daven out loud, and you're davening a longer davening because you need to present all your merit. So he says, in those days, they normally daven through emtsayim, through intermediaries. Why? Because they weren't on the level, they didn't merit the special hashkafa, special relationship with Hashem in that generation. He says, therefore, they would daven very long. So they would daven a lot. They would daven a long davening, but they would also daven out loud. So that was the typical davening, was a long davening and out loud. When Eli saw Chana that she was davening long davening, but she was also davening quietly, so those two things don't go together. If you're davening a long davening, that means you're davening through an intercessor, and typically you would daven out loud. And since she was davening quietly, so he thought that she was drunk, because those two things do not belong together. And Chana responded that no. In fact, she was davening directly to Hashem, and still, despite that, she was davening a long davening, and that was because she was just in such pain that because of her pain, she still davened a long davening. So that's the Malbin's approach. The reason why Eli thought she was drunk was because she was making a combination here of two things that normally don't go together. She was davening a long davening. Normally, that means you're davening through an intermediary, and that would be normally davened out loud. And since she was davening quietly, so Eli thought that she was drunk.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I'm wondering if Al Libo
yes.
can also be translated as fervently, emotionally. Perhaps that added to the impression that she was drunk.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Yeah, I hear that. I mean, the Gemara definitely learns from those words, or seems to learn from those words, that it means with lots of kavana. So, fervently, with passion. I want to just mention, the Kli Yakar has a very nice and very relevant idea here. When the Gemara says that we learn from this pasuk, the Chana, verse 13, the Chana himedaberes aliba, and Chana was speaking on her heart. The Gemara says, we learn from there that when a person davens, they have to have kavana. So the Kli Yakar has a very nice interpretation here of where the Gemara is deriving that from. The Kli Yakar says that the word he is extra here. It says, Chana, she was speaking on her heart. She was davening with kavana. Why does it say he? She. It should just say, and Chana was davening, you know, davening on her heart.
Chana, she was speaking.
So why does it say the word he? Right? He is extra. So says the Kli Yakar, you know, the Pshat, because often when a person davens, rak basel knows. Only our lips are moving. And our lips are just moving on their own. We've davened so many times. We know the davening by heart. And really, it's not us davening. It's just our lips are davening. Lip service. It's just, we're just going through the motions. That's why the pasuk says here that he midaberes aliba. She was davening. She was engaged in her davening. And it wasn't her lips going on their own. Rak tosel na'ot, I mean, just her lips were moving, meaning that her lips were moving along with her. But it wasn't her lips that were doing the davening. She was doing the davening. Her lips were just moving along with her davening. But she was focused, she was engaged, she was involved in her davening. And that's where the Gemara would derive that when a person davens, they have to have kavana, because she medaberes aliba. She was there. She was, what's the word they like to use now? Presence,
mindfulness.
Thank you, mindfulness. That's
throwing
the.
Throwing herself into it.
What?
Throwing herself.
Yeah,
into it.
The mindfulness is very in. It's an in word. There was mindfulness there. Thank you. I was trying to.
Does this put anybody soul when they die?
Sure.
I didn't know it was an in word.
I
came across something where two people were davening for each other.
Yeah, the Gemara says that if you daven for someone else, then you'll be answered first.
The same problem,
I remember that. I don't remember where I said it.
So I want to share one other idea here, which I thought was fascinating, of what was going on with Chana and Eli. And this is presented by the riff. It's not the riff in the back of the Gemara, it's the riff on Agata. So there's a few different... The Gemara here has a lot of little anecdotes about what went on here with Chana. Some of them we've mentioned before. Let me just read on a little bit from the Gemara that we were just reading about this particular episode. So the Gemara goes on and it says, "Vayomer Eli Eli ad masay tishtakrin." So in the next verse, Eli says to Chana, in verse 14, Pasuk Yadalid, Eli says to Chana, "Until when are you going to be drunk? You know, what you're always why are you getting drunk and then davening?" So the Gemara learns from here. From here we learn that if you see something in your friend that's not proper, so then tzarich lochicho, one needs to rebuke them. Now, before we go off, run off and rebuke everyone that we see doing something improper, we have to know that they're going to accept our rebuke or be confident. And in order to be confident, I think you have to have somewhat of a relationship with that person. You have to know them. You have to say it in a nice way. You have to be the right person to tell them that. But that's what the Gemara derives, that from here we learn that if a person sees something that's not proper, they have to rebuke them. And then she replies what she replies, and then the Gemara actually makes the point that you made before, which is that Eli says, "L'si l'shalom," and a few psukim, Eli's going to say, "Go in peace." And the Gemara is going to say that we learn from here that if you suspect something in your friend and that they're doing something wrong, and it turns out that you are wrong, so then, tzarech lefaiso, you have to appease them. And not only that, the Gemara says, ela shetzarech levarcho, you also have to bless them. And that's learned from here, where Eli gives Chana a blessing afterwards. You try to do what you can to make up for it. So, you know, some people, and you'll hear that sometimes, at least in yeshiva circles, you know, somebody says, "Oh, I was close to you, I thought you were doing something wrong," then the other person will respond, "Okay, you owe me a bracha, you know, you owe me a blessing." And that's learned from this Gemara.
Really?
So the riff says as follows. So, what was it that Eli thought that she was doing wrong that he made her think she was drunk? So it's really this question again, why did Eli think she was drunk? It seems that he's assuming that the reason why Eli thought she was drunk was because he thought she was doing something wrong, and in order, I guess, to explain why she would be doing that, he must have thought that he said she must be drunk, otherwise why would she be doing this thing that's improper? So, and he says, it wasn't the drunkenness that he thought was improper, because... Because... Because in the end, I'll put aside discussion. I'm not sure if I understand that point.
Yeah, it's exactly opposite to the Archbold observation.
That what?
That he admonished her because it is not only improper, it is forbidden for a drunkard to pray at the tabernacle.
Right. I think that's definitely the simple approach. He has some calculation of why that can't be true, but I don't really follow his point.
Yeah, besides that's the only rationale he would give.
Yeah, but I mean, so the thing is, it has to be from this side. I mean, that's what? Because it wasn't just any place. He said that the tabernacle is the place that hurt.
I think that would definitely add to it. Right, you're not allowed to go in drunk. Right. But the Gemara is saying in general you're not allowed to daven when you're drunk also, no matter where you are. So we mentioned in a previous week, you know, another chazal here. Another chazal, which is that the Gemara says, the pasuk says that Chana davened on Hashem. And the pasuk says, what does that mean? What the Gemara says, what does that mean that she daven on Hashem? It says melamed sheticha dvarim klapei mala, which seems to mean that she kind of drew up like challenges towards God. And the Gemara has a couple of things that she said, and one of the things was that she said Hashem tzivakos, Hashem, you God who control the whole world. You've created so many legions and angels and everything. You can't just give me one child. She like challenged Hashem in that way, and she also said that you know Hashem, everything that you created is for a reason, and you gave me breasts, and that you won't give me a child with which to nurse. And again, she challenged Hashem in this way. So says the Rif, that's what was Engel Hagon. That wasn't proper of her to speak to God in that way, in that challenging way. Because, you know, people are barren. It happens. There are people who go childless. And you know, is that, should every person who doesn't have a child make that, you know, that challenge to God? How can you do this to me? You know, that's the fate of some people, and that's how Hashem created the world. So he says Eli was able to determine what she was saying, even though she wasn't davening out loud. He says Eli was watching her mouth, the pasuk says, and he knew what she was saying, and that's why he thought she was drunk, because he knew that she was, you know, a tzaddikus, a righteous person, and how could it be that she is, you know, challenging God in this way? That's how a drunk person talks. You know, God, how could you do this to me? And throw up these challenges, you know. And so Eli assumed that she was drunk. So she responded, no, that's not what happened. I'm a broken woman. And says the Rif, she was saying that I have Ruach HaKodesh. I have divine inspiration. I have a prophecy. That I'm in fact not barren. I know that I'm not a barren woman. I'm not an akara. I have the ability to have children. He says the pasuk describes Chana as Vashem Sagar Rachma. Hashem closed up her womb, which implies, he says, that it was open. That she originally had the ability to have children, and Hashem closed up her womb and took away that ability. So she says, I'm really created with that ability. And why would that happen? Why would Hashem close up her womb? Because he wants me to daven to him. The Gemara says, why were the imahos, why were all the mothers barren, the wives of Avram, Sarah, right, Rivka, why were they barren? Because Hashem desires the tefillos of tzaddikim, of the righteous. So Chana said, that's why I'm barren. And that's why I'm davening so much, because that's what Hashem wants from me. And then he says, now we can understand what she said. She said, Hashem gave me breasts. He of course gave them to me, Hashem. You gave them to me in order to nurse a child. And why can't anybody claim that? Why can't any barren woman claim that? So what Chana was saying was, I have Ruach HaKodesh, I have divine inspiration, I know that I'm going to have a child in the future. She was a Nevi'ah, she was a prophet. And therefore she said, since I'm going to have a child, I don't want it to be when I'm older, when I won't be able to nurse the child anymore. Rather, you know, and then I'm going to have to get a, hire out someone to nurse him. Rather, let me, give me the child now, Hashem. That's what she was saying. You created me with breasts in order to nurse a child. Don't give me this child that you're going to give me in my old age. Give it to me now. And then she said, you know, out of all the creations that you made, you can't give me a child now. And the Gemara gave a mashal. The Gemara gave a parable in order to understand that claim. That, you know, you created so much, you can't just give me one child. So the Gemara said a mashal that a poor person is standing on the door of the palace. There's a big party going on. And he knocks on the door and asks for food. And the idea of the mashal, right, and he says, you know, you have so much food. You know, you have so much food, can't you just give me some? So the Rif says what the mashal is, what this parable is saying, is not, he says certainly they would have given him the leftovers at the end of the meal. But what he was saying was, why wait till the end? Give me some, can you give me some now? You have so much, and you're for sure going to have leftovers. Can you just give me some right now? I'm hungry now. And that's what the nimshal, the explanation of the parable, Chana was saying, you can give me a child in the future, you can wait, but why don't you just give it to me now while I'm still young?
Speed it up.
How old was she? So, that's a good question, because from what I've seen, she was already very old. And it was miraculous that she had a baby. He's taking the approach, seemingly, that she was younger. I saw in different sources that she was either 100 or 130. She was already very old. So, not clear how that...
but, I mean, at that age, it's still really crazy. As opposed to the Sarah never prayed. The Sarah, you know, sort of laughed.
You mean what she reads that age?
It was something of Israel about a 70-year-old. She just had twins.
I mean, Yocheved was 130 when she had her, when she had Moshe. Yocheved was... Yeah, I think she was 130 when she had Moshe. Yeah.
She did it more than once. She did it there, she did it the Amish. And who else did it?
Rebecca.
Rebecca. So is there...
So there... The simple explanation is that he desires their tefillos, that the prayer of a righteous person is extremely powerful. And these people were exceptionally righteous, and to bring about more prayer from these people than they had to have go through this challenge in order to pray. Okay. We're going to try to read some sukkim now. Okay. So we are up to, let's go from Pasuk Yud Dalet, verse 14. Yomer Eli, Eli, and Eli said to her, "Ad masai tishtakrin, until when will you get drunk? Hasirias yenich me'alayich, remove the wine from yourself, stop drinking. Vatan Chana, vatomer, and Chana answered, and she said, Lo Adoni, no, my master Eli, Ishak shasruach anochi, I am a woman of a broken spirit, of a hard spirit. The yayin mishecher lo shasisi, I didn't drink any wine or beer. Va'eshbok as nafshi v'nei Hashem, and even without drinking, I poured out my soul to God because of my difficult situation. Al titen es amoscha v'shnei bas liyal, do not consider your maidservant as a Bas Liyah, do not consider your maidservant as a person who is improper. Ki merov sichi v'kasi dibarti adena. Because it was out of my my prayer, my siach, my plight, and my anger. That's why I've spoken until now. That's why I've been praying like this. Vayang Eli, and Eli responded, Vayomer, and he said, L'chilu shalom, go in peace. V'lokei Yisrael yiteng ashe laseich. And the God of Israel should give your request, asher sha'alt me'imo, that you have asked of him. So, we mentioned that the Gemara says about this, that you see from here that if you suspect someone of something and it turns out that it's not true, so you have to appease them, and that's why he said go in peace. And he also said, he also gave her a bracha that the God of Israel should give you your request. We've mentioned in the past, about 2 years ago, that the Malbim says that when it says Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel, so whenever the Malbim has, you know, certain rules sort of throughout Tanakh, and the Malbim says that the term Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel, is meant to imply or speak to the special hashgacha, the special attention that Hashem gives to each individual Jew. And hashgacha pratis. And what Eli was saying is, Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel, with his personal hashgacha, his personal overseeing of your every detail of your life, he should grant your request. The Mefarshim here go back and forth whether the Radak says on this was both. It could be interpreted as a tefillah, a prayer that Hashem should answer your request, or it could also be interpreted as a prophecy. Eli was also a prophet. He was a Navi. Hashem will give you your request.
He doesn't know what he's asking for.
What's that?
He doesn't know what he's asking for, does he?
Well, I think at this point he probably does, because she already, explained it's because of my situation.
I mean, he must have known that.
Right. But and even if he didn't, right, even if he didn't know, he could still have a prophecy that you're whatever it is that you're davening for is going to be answered.
He answered him. Yes. You know, why you stop being drunk?
Right. So the psukim don't explicitly say that she explained what she was davening for. She just said,
we know.
Right. And it could be that, you know, in real time she gave a little more detail. And the Navi's only recording, the narrative, the some of it.
What was the baby's name?
What will it be named?
No, what was it named?
Shmuel.
Shmuel?
He's going to be the topic of this.
It's the title.
He's going to be the main.
So it was a boy.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. You know, he's going to be born soon. Any minute now, if we have time.
What time do you go to?
We go till 9, till 10:30. Yeah, sure. Are we up to here? Okay. Pasuk Yud Ches.
Also, he's answering. He's not saying that. He says, whatever your request is, let it be answered.
But Tomer, and she said, Timsa shivchas fachein beinecha, your maidservant should find favor in your eyes. Vatelecha isha v'darka, vatochal, and the woman went on her way, and she ate. Ufanelo hayu la'od, and her face, seemingly her sad face, her angry face, she no longer had. She was now teared up. The Chazal say, Vatelecha isha v'darka, and the woman went on her way, is a hint to that she returned to her way, meaning she was older, and now she went back to menstruating again, and she redeveloped the ability to produce a child. And And Panel Ohayula owed, and she no longer had the sad face. So there are different interpretations of that. There's a very interesting chazal, statements of the sages, which, you know, is astounding. It says, it teaches us that her face changed, that she used to look like a monkey. That's what it says. So I was like, when I saw that, I was blown away. I was like, what does that mean, that she used to look like a monkey? So Reb Chaim Vital says that doesn't really mean that she looked like a monkey, but rather that she was old, and she looked very old, and her skin was sagging, and she was an older woman. But at this point, she returned to her youth. She no longer had the old face. She redeveloped the ability to have a child at this point in time.
Yeah, you know, sometimes a woman will come up and say, I know you're pregnant. I can see it on your face. That's growing.
Uh-huh.
Benching in 1 minute.
Better than looking at the stomach with some. Better than looking at the stomach with
sometimes
you make a mistake.
No, you're